All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we're taking a trip back to 1977.
Back when disco was king.
And the Supreme Court was tackling a case that really shook things up when it comes to equality in hiring.
Definitely a landmark case.
Dothard v. Rawlinson.
Oh, yeah, this one is a classic.
So picture this. You're Diane Rawlinson. You just graduated with a degree in correctional psychology. You're ready to hit the ground running.
Make a difference.
You apply to be a prison guard in Alabama. Seems straightforward, right?
You would think.
But then, wham, rejected.
And the reason.
Let me guess, criminal record?
Nope, you're too small.
Too small? What, like height?
Exactly. Alabama had these height and weight requirements for prison guards 5'2" and 120 pounds.
Hmm. I can maybe see the logic, needing to be strong and all that.
On the surface, maybe. But when you dig a little deeper, a really troubling pattern emerges. These requirements weren't just about strength. They were a way to keep women out.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Yeah.
Discrimination.
Right.
Bingo. These seemingly neutral requirements had a disproportionate impact on women.
Okay, so how bad are we talking?
Brace yourself. A staggering 41.13% of women in the U.S. were automatically excluded by these requirements, compared to less than 1% of men.
Wow. That's a huge she difference.
Yeah. And that's where Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 comes in. You familiar with that one?
Of course, designed to prevent employment discrimination based on a bunch of things like race, sex, religion. You know the drill.
Right. So how does that apply here? It's not like Alabama outright said no women allowed.
It's more subtle than that. This is where disparate impact comes into play.
Disparate impact. Break that down for us.
Sure. Imagine a company that says they only hire people who can dunk a basketball.
Okay, I see where you're going with this.
Sounds neutral, but in reality, it would really limit the number of women who could qualify.
Even if that wasn't the intention.
Exactly. Dothard shows how seemingly objective standards can actually be sneaky ways to discriminate.
So Alabama had this rule. It clearly impacted women way more than men. Did they even try to defend it?
Oh, they did. They claimed these requirements were job-related, saying that prison guards need to be big and strong to handle the tough and sometimes dangerous prison environment.
So it's all about safety and security. That's their argument.
That's their story.
Did the court buy it?
Not at all. The Supreme Court wasn't convinced. They said Alabama couldn't prove that these physical requirements were actually necessary to do the job of a prison guard.
Okay, so round one goes to Rawlinson. But I have a feeling this isn't the end of the story.
You'd be right. There's another layer to this. Alabama also had this regulation, Regulation 204.
What's that one about?
It flat out banned women from working in contact positions at male maximum security prisons.
Wait, seriously, that sounds like straight up discrimination.
Right. It seems like they're just ignoring Title VII at this point.
So how did they get away with that?
Well, there's this little thing called the Bonafide Occupational Qualification, BFOQ for short.
Okay, I'm listening.
It's a very, very narrow exception to Title VII. It lets employers discriminate based on sex.
Hold on. Discriminate?
Yes, but only if it's absolutely essential to the job. We're talking essential, like no other way around it.
That's a pretty high bar to clear.
Yeah.
So how does this BFOQ thing work in practice?
It's not a free pass, that's for sure. And get this, the Supreme Court actually let Alabama use this BFOQ defense in this case.
Really?
Yep. They said that because Alabama's prisons were so violent and understaffed at the time, having women in these roles could be dangerous for them and could even mess with the security of the prison.
So they're saying it's for the women's own safety.
That's the argument, yes.
Hmm, that's tricky. But didn't anyone on the court see a problem with that reasoning? I mean, what's to stop other employers from using the same excuse?
You make a good point, and this is where things get really interesting because not everyone agreed.
Ah, here come the dissents.
You got it. Justice Marshall, he was never shy about speaking his mind. He was especially against this ruling. He saw it as a huge step backward for equal rights.
What did he say specifically?
Well, he argued that the court was basically blaming women for male violence.
Blaming the victim.
Essentially. Yeah. And he also said that they were letting Alabama use the bad conditions in their prisons as an excuse to discriminate.
So he's calling them out on their poor management? That's a bold move.
Justice Marshall was never one to hold back, especially when it came to issues of equality. And his dissent in this case really gets to the heart of the matter. It forces us to ask some tough questions about how we prioritize safety versus equality in the workplace.
And that's a debate that continues today.
It's a really powerful point, isn't it?
It is. Makes you think about who gets to decide what safe really means.
Exactly. And whether safety can ever be used to justify discrimination.
Definitely a slippery slope. But let's step back for a second. Dothard was decided back in 77. What kind of impact did it have on employment law in the long run?
Oh, it had a big impact. For one, it really solidified the use of statistics to prove discrimination. Remember that 41.13% we talked about?
Yeah, the huge difference between men and women excluded by those height and weight requirements.
Right. That became a key piece of evidence.
So thanks to Dothard, if you can show a big statistical difference like that, it makes it easier to prove discrimination, even if a rule doesn't explicitly target a specific group.
That's the idea. Dothard showed the importance of looking beyond just the words of a rule and seeing how it actually plays out in reality.
Makes sense. But didn't Dothard also say that security concerns could sometimes be an exception to anti-discrimination laws?
Yeah, that's the other side of the coin. The BFOQ defense, that narrow exception, it's still around.
So Dothard kind of gives us a mixed bag.
It does. It strengthens the ability to fight discrimination in some ways. But it also acknowledges that there might be situations where exceptions are allowed.
It's a tough balance to strike.
It is. And it's a balance courts are still figuring out today. Dothard reminds us that achieving equality is a process. And sometimes, even well-intentioned rules can have unintended consequences. And those consequences can sometimes be discriminatory.
Let me play devil's advocate for a minute. Couldn't someone argue that the court made the right call with the BFOQ in this case? I mean, those Alabama prisons back then, weren't they notoriously bad?
That's a fair point, and it was definitely an argument that was brought up during the case. The majority opinion, they really stressed how dangerous and understaffed those prisons were.
I can see how that would factor into their decision, but still, saying that women can be excluded for their own safety, it just feels like a dangerous precedent to set.
And that's exactly what Justice Marshall argued in his dissent. He said that allowing this BFOQ defense could open the door for all sorts of justifications for discrimination. Not just in prisons, but in all kinds of jobs.
So basically, he's worried that the court's decision could backfire.
Right. He's saying it could be used to justify discrimination that has nothing to do with safety.
Okay, I get it. So we're left with this big question. How do we balance the need for safety and security with the right to equal opportunity?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's one we're still grappling with today. We see it pop up in all kinds of debates, from dress codes to transgender rights in the workplace.
Dothard might be an old case, but it seems like the issues it raised are still relevant today.
Absolutely. It shows how difficult it can be to balance these different values, and it reminds us to be cautious about using safety as a justification for policies that could have a discriminatory impact.
So Dothard is more than just a history lesson. It's a reminder that we need to be careful about how we use the idea of safety.
Exactly. It can't be an excuse to discriminate.
It's like a warning sign for us.
It is. A reminder to be vigilant and to keep fighting for equality, even when it's hard.
So what does all this mean for us today? Could a case like Dothard even happen in today's world? I mean, our understanding of gender roles has changed so much since the 70s.
That's the question, isn't it? Could it happen again? It's hard to say for sure. On the one hand, our ideas about gender have definitely evolved, and the courts are more aware of the subtle ways discrimination can happen. But concerns about safety and security haven't gone away. In fact, they might even be more heightened in some areas.
So we're still trying to figure out how to reconcile these competing priorities, safety versus equality.
Exactly. It's about finding that balance.
And making sure that one doesn't come at the expense of the other.
Right. Dothard reminds us that we need to be constantly on guard to make sure that security concerns aren't being used as a cover for discrimination.
Yeah, it's a real balancing act, trying to protect people without unfairly excluding them.
Exactly. And Dothard shows just how tricky it can be. I mean, think about it. The court's decision, it was influenced by the specific situation in those Alabama prisons back then, you know, with all the violence and understaffing.
Right. It was a pretty extreme situation.
It was. But even though the specifics of the case were tied to that time and place, the bigger questions it raised, those are still with us today.
Like what?
Well, like how much weight do we give to gender stereotypes when we're making decisions about safety? And how do we make sure that security concerns aren't just being used as an excuse to discriminate?
So, even though the case is from the past, the issues are still alive and well.
They are. And they remind us that context matters. We need to understand the situation fully before we can decide what's fair and what's discriminatory.
Okay, but let's say a case like Dothard popped up today. Same basic idea, an employer using security concerns to justify a policy that happens to impact women more than men. How do you think courts would handle it?
That's a good question. It's impossible to say for sure how any court would rule, but I do think Dothard would be a really important case they'd have to consider.
You think the outcome would be different today?
Well, I think courts today would look a lot harder at those security concerns. They'd want more evidence, more proof that the policy was truly necessary, you know, that there wasn't another way to do things.
So employers wouldn't be able to just throw around the safety card so easily.
Exactly. Courts are more aware now of how bias can sneak into policies, even if it's not intentional.
And they're also probably more likely to consider other options, right? Like, are there ways to address the safety issues without discriminating?
Right. It's not just about whether there's a risk, but whether it's a risk that can't be managed in any other way. And they'd also be more likely to look at the impact on different groups, not just women, to see if the policy is really neutral or not.
So in a way, Dothard might have actually made it harder for employers to get away with using security concerns as a cover for discrimination.
I think that's a fair assessment. It forced the legal system to confront these issues head on, you know, to really define what's acceptable and what's not. And that conversation continues today. It's pushing us to think critically about how we balance safety, equality, and fairness in the workplace.
It's like Dothard kicked off this debate that's still going on today. It made us think about how our assumptions about gender and about safety can shape the policies we create and how those policies can have a real impact on people's lives.
Exactly. It's a reminder that the fight for equality is a process. It's not something that just happens overnight.
Well, there you have it, folks. A deep dive into Dothard v. Rawlinson, a case that, despite all the controversy, really pushed us to think about how we balance safety and equality in the workplace.
And how those questions are still relevant today.
We hope you found this deep dive informative and maybe even got you thinking about how these issues play out in your own lives.
Because at the end of the day, this isn't just about legal arguments. It's about creating a world where everyone has an air shot.
Thanks for joining us. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a more just world.